The towering summit of Mount Everest beckons to many climbers, especially those who live in its shadow. It is a strange and unfortunate coincidence that many of the people who live in Tibet, the nation that is home to Mount Everest, are also slowly going blind. Disease, ultraviolet rays, and environmental stresses have made Tibetans particularly vulnerable to blindness. But there are a few who are overcoming this disability to brave the highest mountain in the world. From Lhasa, Stephanie Jackenthal has their story.
Imagine hiking up a narrow rocky ridgeline 400 feet above a rushing glacial stream. The footing is so tight, you have to step heel to toe. The high altitude air is so thin that your pace is as slow as your coordination. Your only guides are two trekking poles, a bell, and a companion's voice you follow along the sheer cliff.
Okay, step big here.
Now, imagine you're trekking to the peak of a 23,000-foot Himalayan mountain, and you're blind.
Step big up here. Okay, so stay to the right. It drops off steep left.
Last October, six Tibetan teenagers set out to do just that. Their undertaking wasn't really to conquer a mountain, so much as it was to build self-confidence. Every step up would be a testament to what purpose and perseverance can accomplish. As important for the blind to experience as for the sighted to witness with their own eyes.
I want to show other people, because a lot of Tibetan people, they think that we, the blind people, cannot do anything. I want to show them we can do something, you know.
That's Keela, an 18-year-old massage therapist who's been blind since birth. She and the other five teenagers on the expedition are students at Braille Without Borders, a Lhasa-based training center for the blind. Each kid had an English-speaking guide. I was Keela's.
I want to go to climb mountain, but my parents, they always say, no, you cannot, you will fall down or something like that.
Despite living in the mountain mecca of the world, none of the kids had ever been in the mountains. They were in luck. American Eric Weinmayer, the first and only blind person to summit Mount Everest, would lead the team. The goal? To summit Loch Pari, a 23,100-foot peak on the north side of Everest. The project was fittingly enough called Climbing Blind.
Climbing is one of these things that has a way of just ingraining itself into your character. It gives you confidence, it gives you skill. It's the greatest thing to be able to teach yourself skills and systems and then survive in this environment that's so inhospitable to anyone, not just to blind people.
Eric Weinmayer went blind when he was 13 years old from a congenital degenerative retinal disease.
These kids can have a success on a high mountain in Tibet. What a statement it's going to make. It's just going to continue to push that social change further and faster.
In May, we did some early training with the kids and took them on a four-day practice hike. We returned 5 months later for the big climb. First stop, the place where the idea first germinated. Braille Without Borders and Lhasa.
When they find out that they can climb a mountain and then they can master a rock like that, then I guess they can even do even better in life, I hope at least.
Sabria Timberkin founded the organization 7 years ago. Now she and partner Paul Cronenberg run the vocational center Braille Without Borders in downtown Lhasa. Timberkin has been blind since 13. After hearing about Weinmayer's 2001 summit of Everest, she invited him to the center. She and Cronenberg will make the journey with us to Loch Pari.
Maybe he don't understand.
I don't know.
We left the Snow Leopard Guest House in Kuomalanga Nature Preserve on a brisk, bright October morning. Altitude, 14,000 feet. Anyone in Tibet wanting to climb Everest, the world's sixth highest peak, begins here. Keela and I rambled along the rocky path under bright morning sunshine.
Stepping up. Stepping up. So now it's 10:15. We're getting a little bit later of a start than we expected. But we're heading up right now. We're heading up right into a nice little saddle of the ridge.
She trekked closely behind me, feeling the rocky terrain with her poles, following my footsteps and listening for my bear bell and direction. That night, we camped near a rushing glacial stream. The endless black sky was painted with bright, blinking starlight. The temperature dropped below 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Fire!
That's Kenzing singing. He's 16 years old and studying to be a teacher. Like many Tibetans, Kenzing's family heated their home with yak dung, which doesn't burn properly at high altitudes. The soot infected his eyes, and he lost his sight. He and the other teenagers had no real sense of the potential danger ahead.
I think it's not dangerous.
It was up to the guides to keep them on track. Along the way, Buddhist nuns at the Rongbuk Monastery blessed us and prayed that our hike up to Everest Base Camp and beyond would be safe. We finally arrived at Everest Base Camp. I'm standing looking at Mount Everest, just behind a running stream that's coming down. It's the glacier stream off of Everest. It's this big rock field, and it's sort of barren. During our two rest days in the shadow of Everest, we had to learn to breathe all over again at 17,000 feet. As we repacked our gear and waited for 60 yaks to arrive, the teens were feisty and fired up to go higher. They were in a hurry. We cleared British Camp, then Interim Camp, then Changsi Camp at 19,900 feet. Soon we'd be at the glacier on Loch Pari.
They were super fired up just to nuke it.
Jeff Evans is the team's medic.
They were just ready to go, and that's a combination of being a teenager as well as being on such an adventure. But just with any, you know, mountaineering experience and adventure, we really have to kind of pace ourselves and allow our bodies to get used to being up high.
The next day, we got our first peek at Loch Pari. As we approached Advanced Base Camp's 21,000-foot blustery site, Weinmayer was pleased.
Whole team made it. Pretty impressive.
But Sabria Timberkin sensed trouble was on the way.
We saw the kids this morning, and some of the kids had headache. One had nausea. One didn't want to eat, you know? So for us, it's always, shall we risk it? Shall we really go up there? Shall we really risk the kids' lives, or just the kids' fun?
Exhaustion, an incoming snowstorm, and a bevy of assorted concerns got the better of us. Weinmayer and the team decided against continuing to Loch Pari. We refocused our sights on Rongbuk Glacier, 2,100 feet shy of Loch Pari's peak.
And I didn't want to be like a Captain Bly, you know, just like pushing miserable blind Tibetan kids to the summit of some peak. At 21,000 feet, they had worked extremely hard.
Later that day, Kiela, who was giggling and singing upon arrival, developed acute mountain sickness with a splitting headache, nausea, difficulty breathing, and no appetite.
When I wake up, all the body is very cold, and face and forehead, they are very hot, and then start a headache. And it's really strong. Oh my God, I never have headache like this.
The pain stabbing her left eye became so severe during the night, I pulled on my thick down jacket and trudged to Jeff Evans' tent for ibuprofen and a steroid called Stecajon that shrinks the brain swelling. This was just a temporary solution. Kila needed to go down the mountain the next day to avoid a life-threatening situation. Evan stopped by our tent the next morning to check on Kila and break the bad news.
Kila, this medicine has made you feel better. And if you didn't have this medicine in you right now, you would feel bad. Mm. Like last night, remember? So, the best thing for us to do is to have you go down to base camp and wait for a couple of days for us. Because up here, when you're this high, you don't get better. You get worse. And I can help you with medicine only up to a certain point. But then, if the medicine stops working, then we're in trouble.
Kila wasn't alone heading down the mountain. 16-year-old Sanam Bonzo was combating a relentless headache, and 19-year-old Tashi was vomiting.
Okay, bye, you guys. Thanks.
Sanam, bye-bye.
Sanam, you all set? Ready to roll?
Stop crying and put a smile on.
That left three kids and three guides, plus Weinmayer, Tenberken, and Kronenberg at Advanced Base Camp, also known as ABC. It would take us, 2 days to descend to base camp, a drop from 21,000 to 17,000 feet down slippery, snowy, rocky trails.
It's 8:30 and we've just arrived and tucked into tents. I'm sitting between Sinambonzo and Kila, who are just exhausted and sleeping. The Sherpas will bring us some dinner they've tried to bring.
Meanwhile, Weinmayer and his team were waiting out a screaming snowstorm.
I wanted to go down and I said, please, just hang on for one more day. Let's get a nice day and let's get across that icefall into the glacier.
And the next day, under clear skies, they did it. They got on Rongbuk Glacier, wriggling across ice humps and sheer snow bridges, navigating shallow hidden holes and scores of pinnacles. We rendezvoused in nearby Shigatse 2 days later.
When we ultimately were able to step foot onto that glacier, I felt like every single kid had given everything they could, and that's all I asked for.
Do you think the kids who made it to the glacier realized that that was the climax of the trip?
Well, a summit can be anything, you know? It could be a rock at 17,000 feet, or it could be the summit of Mount Everest, you know? I mean, my definition of a summit is getting as high as you can and giving it everything you have.
Out of the high mountains, Kila's spirits gain new height.
I think it's good to experience for me.
What do your parents think now?
Yeah, now they think that blind people can do a lot. Yeah.
It was time to go home. We turned our bus toward Lhasa and hit the bumpy road.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when sky is blue.
For NPR News, I'm Stephanie Jackenthal.
Catching a bit of sunshine with these stories of outdoor adventure from NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hamilton.